The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra, I'm Max Rushton, and together with my good friends Paul, Barry and Paolo, we'll take you through many footballing things. Champions League, game of the night at Wembley as Spurs beat Dortmund. Liverpool held at home, plus wins for City, United and Chelsea, all of which means an English side will definitely win the Champions League. Elsewhere, nasty Neymar muttering under his breath, shaving cuts and ingrowing hairs. That, plus a Premier League preview, your questions, feedback corner, and that'll do for today. Barry Glendenning, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Paul McInnes, hello.
Hiya.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Great. Paolo Bandini, how are you?
I'm also great.
Oh, isn't that marvellous? Right, let's crack on. Now, look, we're going to get onto the football in a second, but the front page of The Guardian this morning, headline, Graham Taylor accused of role in sex abuse cover-up. Paul, you have read all of it and can explain it all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be careful because it's obviously, it's very sensitive and delicate, but it's also seems pretty significant. There's an ongoing public inquiry into the child abuse allegations in football, which was brought to light by Danny Taylor of this parish, and so far includes hundreds and hundreds of accusations of abuse and hundreds of suspects. Now, Taylor's become involved because he's alleged to have dissuaded a youth team player at Aston Villa from making a complaint against a guy called Ted Langford, who was the coach of a team then affiliated with Villa. And this was in 1987 to 1988 season. The youth team player who went on to have a career in the professional game is called Tony Bryan. And he said that Taylor spoke to him alongside his assistant manager, Dave Richardson, and persuaded him not to go public about accusations as he would get abuse from the terraces. And this appears to be sort of consistent with a lot of the cover-up stuff around football where people say, well, yes, we understand it's bad, but it would be worse if it came out. Mm-hmm. So what Danny reports is quite shocking, really, because Langford, who ran a boys' club called the Dunlop Terriers, he was a serial abuser. He was jailed in 2007. He died in 2012. This complaint, like I say, was made during the 1987 to 88 season, but Langford was paid by Villa up until the end of the 88 to 89 season. And there seems to be some inconsistency between what the club said happened and they knew about him and the fact that he was still being paid. Richardson, it's probably worth noting, was the assistant manager at Villa at that time and had previously been assistant manager at Leicester. And he'd brought Ted Langford with him from Leicester to Villa when he moved, in order to sort of bring this feeder club alongside. Richardson then went on to become the youth director at the Premier League and is widely credited with being sort of responsible for helping set up the academy system. So in a sense, that what this revelation does is it sort of pulls the camera back a little bit and you start seeing sort of a different scope of it.
Thanks, Paul. Very well explained. It is definitely worth reading it. Graham Taylor accused of role in sex abuse cover-ups. Front page of the paper, Danny Taylor's piece. The front page of the Sport, Barry. Infantino accused of interference in FIFA reform. This is a pretty straightforward story for you, isn't it, Barry?
Well, yes, I'm very pleased you asked me about this. It's just another sort of FIFA scandal. Gianni Infantino, who we all know, from such glorious bingo productions as every Champions League draw ever made until quite recently, became president of FIFA in February 2016. Last May, he removed the FIFA Ethics Committee. A guy called Miguel Maduro had been giving evidence to a government select committee, the Parliament's Culture, Media and Sport Committee. They're conducting an inquiry into sports governance. And this guy, Maduro, who was sacked as FIFA's governance committee chairman in May, at the same time as the ethics committee went, he said that Gianni Infantino had objected to him blocking the deputy prime minister of Russia, Mr. Vitaly Mutko, from the FIFA council because Infantino thought that it would jeopardize Russian World Cup and it would therefore jeopardize his position as president. Now, there's a rule in place that anyone on the FIFA council has to be politically neutral. So obviously the Deputy Prime Minister of Russia doesn't fall into that bracket, and that's why he was blocked. But then Mutko has a very shady past as well. He's up to his neck in this state-sponsored drug doping. You know, he appears to be Teflon, and he's denied that he knew anything about this Russian state-sponsored doping that we've all heard about. But WADA have said it's absolutely inconceivable he couldn't have known about it. So anyway, yeah, that was what came out of the select committee yesterday. FIFA have refused to send anyone to speak to them on the grounds that it could incriminate them. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. I'm sure Infantino will
sail along
and nothing much will happen.
Do you think if you were the head of FIFA, you would clean it all up?
I think I would try, but I think my good intentions would preclude me from ever becoming the head of FIFA.
That's the thing. But if you were, by some magic, put in there, though, then you would get past that point of corruption and you would be able to be, you would be able to clean the orgy.
Would you?
Tables.
Or if someone said, Barry, would you like this watch?
No, I'm not particularly greedy. I mean, I've often turned down freebies offered to me in my role as a journalist because I thought it would perhaps compromise my integrity in some way, or people would, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch, so I'm pretty choosy.
You
and
say
I think
that,
here in The Guardian, we're obliged to be, you know, you have to be careful about what you do.
£150 worth of meat.
£150 worth of meat?
Seriously, like someone just said...
Weight-wise?
Like, I think it was money-wise, right? They just said, look, we're going to send you a big box of meat. Can you send a tweet about it? And I was like, I can, but I like to be honest about it. I'm not going to go, lovely meat from at whoever it was. So I was just like, look, I've got this box and I put it on the table and it was so much meat. It was just an offensive amount of meat. It was like my living room had turned into an abattoir. And so I sort of said, I've been sent all this. I'll let you know if it's nice. And then I just waited 3 hours and said, I'm full up.
Does Trevor Nelson have a chest freezer?
He's moved to Barnet. And
so
you know,
there's no way you could even borrow that to freeze the meat. So what happened to it? Is it just now rancid
in
your back garden?
I took some to the homeless shelter, but I don't like to talk about I don't like to talk about that sort of activity, as you know. No, my question genuinely is about...
Well, this guy Miguel Maduro, who was giving evidence to the select committee yesterday and was sacked by Infantino, he seemed to suggest that he thinks Infantino took the presidency with the best of intentions, but is now just only interested in self-preservation.
To sort of follow on from Max's perspective with the meat, do we think we'd be more okay with it if, you know, whoever was in charge of FIFA was like, just received this bundle of cash from Uruguay, for instance. Not insinuating about Uruguay. Just received this bundle of cash. I'm going to have a think about their proposals, you know. But, you know, you're upfront about it. We're putting it out there.
Take some of it down the homeless shelter and then...
I think we're all corruptible. I think everyone is corruptible.
Yeah,
and everyone has a price and a level.
There's a system as well, isn't there? There's a system in place, and there'll be umpteen people who have made long careers out of you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And if somebody comes in there and goes, right, guys, this is over, then there'll probably be a lot of people whose self-interest is not aligned with that and might do things to stop it.
But the thing is, I mean, I think when Sepp Blatter was president of FIFA, his salary was never made public, I think, but it was definitely over €1 million a year, and he got €800 a day per diems when he was going about his business. That would do me. I don't want any more.
But it'd be like Brewster's Millions, wouldn't it? At the end of the day, I've got 250 quid to spend on site. I've just got everything I need today. I'll go to Ryman's and buy just a load of stationery. What are you going to do?
But this is true in all walks of life, right? The richer you get, the more things are given to you for free.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a thing.
And also the more things you spend money on. I mean, you know, keeping a Swiss villa halfway up the Eiger, or I don't know, is that in Switzerland? You know, that's not cheap.
But I don't want a Swiss villa.
You say that you say that now.
I mean, if I
show you.
If I won the lottery, yeah. I wouldn't move house. I'd stay where I am.
You wouldn't quit your job. You're one of those.
I'd spruce it up a bit, but I don't want to live out the country in an estate.
This is quite interesting, isn't it? Barry is basically the only thing that can save democracy. It's becoming clear.
What's more important? Barry takes over what? Britain, the EU?
Parachute Barry in at the UN.
I'm being told we should talk about the games. Spurs 3, Dortmund 1. I was there.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You were there when the hoodoo was broken.
I was there when the hoodoo was broken. And obviously, like a true fan, in a box with a free chicken dinner.
You left to beat the traffic.
Left, missed Vertonghen's red cards. Everything that's wrong with football, in a nutshell. It's always interesting because I watch most games on telly and don't go to the game. When you are at a game, you have a totally different perspective on A, you get to see the movement of the players a bit more. B, controversial things that happen, like the offside goal that wasn't, you just go, oh, it was offside, and you carry on with the game. You don't spend 10 minutes analysing it. So it just changes it totally. But from my perspective, first half, Dortmund was so much better than Tottenham and kept the ball. It just looked like they had an extra player. And then I thought Spurs actually played quite well in the second half.
I thought Spurs played well throughout. I did think there was a bit of a rope-a-dope about what went on in the first half. I didn't think that really Dortmund got behind that back three often. There was a time when Sanchez gave the ball away and they quickly whipped a ball in and it was just got past Aubameyang. But, you know, they then, you know, Spurs were watertight at the back and then broke very directly and both goals came from those situations. Then second half, they came out, played a bit more progressively, and they could have had lots of goals, Spurs, in the second half, I thought.
Yeah, Kane and Son had those chances, didn't they? I mean, if you're a Dortmund fan, you would be disappointed with a number of those decisions. Harry Kane's goal was a bit like, if you remember Speedball 2 on the Amiga, when you just pressed X and going forward, and you just beat everyone up as you went through, and then beat the keeper up and scored. It was sort of like that, with a slightly better finish.
Speedball was a tremendous game.
Yeah,
we're getting a little bit off there, but a great game. Very hard, though, at the beginning. It took a very long time to master it. Once you cracked it... Anyway, yeah, I agree. I also think that the second goal, the Aubameyang goal, was very clearly onside when you saw it on a replay, which is frustrating for Dortmund. Although there was a hint of offside in the build up to Dortmund's first goal, wasn't there? So perhaps a little bit of a
you're saying it evens out over the season.
Well, I'm not saying that at all. I think Tottenham perhaps might feel that at Wembley in particular they were due to get a couple of breaks because they've had some games where they've played well enough to win and haven't won, and this one went their way. It's a hugely significant result, though, because in this group, I don't think we can take it as read that Real Madrid are going to win all their games, but you certainly expect Real Madrid to top the group. And if it comes down to a situation where potentially even Tottenham go away to Dortmund and lose, goal difference can come into it as well. So the second goal, to get the two-goal cushion on it is important. It's all relevant. And I thought Harry Kane was obviously brilliant. And I thought promising stuff at right back for Serge Aurier as well, coming in, and that sort of question of how you're going to replace Kyle Walker.
He got swamped by Pulisic first half, though, didn't he?
He did, but I felt there's two sides to what you're asking, in particular what Tottenham are asking their fullbacks, and I think what Walker gave them was something going forward, and I think that since he's been gone, that width has been missing, and with Aurier in the team, it wasn't.
It seemed very reminiscent of Walker in that a good footballer, good going forward, potentially could make a big mistake.
Yeah, I mean, at one point, I can't remember who it was who picked this out on Twitter. There was a ball that came across from the right-hand side, and he's at the back post, and he does this sort of extraordinary dip-under dummy, which almost looks like he's just fallen over on his face, and then actually he's sprinting away down the sideline. It's a sort of thing which could backfire on you horribly, but when it works, it looks great.
I wanted to pick out Son as well, because he probably wouldn't have played if Ali wasn't suspended, and actually bring something to Spurs that Ali doesn't, and most of Spurs going forward doesn't, which is pace.
Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely. That's they're reliant on the wing back. Well, last season they were reliant on their fullbacks for the width and for the pace. This season so far, you know, Ben Davies is applying himself really well, but he's not a speed merchant. And you know, Aurier's obviously added a little bit there, but yeah, Son. And his finish was lovely as well. Both him and Kane for his first one as well. That sort of fade out to the left. Beautiful finish. I mean, he's a consistent player nowadays for Spurs.
Yeah, most importantly, Barry, I was very close to Fernando Llorente when he was warming up.
And
in the flesh, just a glorious thing of utter beauty. Yeah. And I was saying this to all the people around me. They didn't seem to be as interested in the beauty of Llorente.
still a very macho culture, isn't it, football? You can't really express that physical admiration for another man too openly.
Ah, he's marvellous.
But this pod here, safe space.
Liverpool 2, Sevilla 2. Who would like to begin the review of that game?
Classically shonky Liverpool, huh? Mm. I mean, I don't think there was anything too much wrong with the penalty. There was a bit of a stilted run-up. He could maybe have been more determined about it, but he got a good connection on it. But the defending, the first goal was awful. You know, two of them lined up, could have cut out the cross. One of them falls over trying to put it away. Second goal, you know, they got mugged off. Could have conceded, could have lost it all in the final minute. There's just, you know, I think everybody's making the observations about centre-half and it's right. But there's just something also about that three that you don't necessarily, in midfield, you don't necessarily have that one person who is shielding as well, I think.
So I think, because Klopp sounded almost dogmatic about it afterwards, where he started saying, oh, everyone wants to talk about players we didn't sign, which obviously is, you know, the reference for most people thinking about is Van Dijk. And I think the thing that I agree with him to a point is people levelled this at Wenger for a long time. Oh, you don't sign centre-backs. He went and signed centre-backs and it didn't get any better. So I sort of agree with Klopp to a point in that I don't think that necessarily buying one centre-back and putting him in there is going to transform this defence into a great defence.
Are you suggesting that Van Dijk could have fallen into the Snodgrass vortex?
I'm just suggesting that maybe there is more to this than the quality of the individual defenders. It's about the way you're lining up.
Should we just explain the Snodgrass vortex? Or should we just leave those who know?
Another central defender who has fallen into the Snodgrass vortex is Jose Font.
Absolutely.
So I think people can figure it out.
Mm. If you want to add to any people who are in the Snodgrass vortex, you know where to go below the line. This idea of changing your goalkeeper doesn't sit well with me.
What, changing them for the Champions
League? Yeah, well, he's changed it before, hasn't he, in the Premier League as well. And I wonder what impact that has on the defenders in front of you.
I'm sure it does. But you know, at the same time, you've got to deal with the reality that it's a squad game. If you're going to have two decent keepers, that second keeper is going to want to play at some point.
Yeah.
So you've got to give them some opportunities.
Well, if we only had our Carabao Cup machine, that's exactly what the Carabao Cup is for. Did we like the fun with Eduardo Barroso chucking the ball away and getting sent from the stands and then someone else on the Sevilla bench blaming Jurgen Klopp and him just shouting, "What did I do? I'm an innocent yeah. man. Free the Liverpool one."
Yeah, it was just such a kind of like petulant thing. Like when you're in a road rage incident. Not that I ever get in road rage incidents as a cyclist on a daily basis, but you sort of start the row and then you back away immediately and say, "I'm not. You know, it's got nothing to do with me. It's you who's doing the row. But let's keep talking and I'll keep doing it by pointing at my own innocence." It felt like he really wanted to have an argument about it, but the only way he was going to do it by saying, "I've done nothing here to start an argument."
I was cycling over Blackfriars Bridge and a cyclist who was more professional, you know, in the full gear on a racer, he wanted to turn right and I was going quite slowly because it's a bit uphill and I was in gear one because I wasn't in a hurry. And he just started shouting, "Come on!" And I was like, well...
I've often felt like that while walking behind someone on the pavement and while they're looking at their phone.
Yeah.
There is a city, where is it? It's probably Hong Kong, isn't it? It's probably Singapore, rather, or somewhere like that, where they're bringing in lanes for people on their phones.
Yeah, I think that's in China, isn't it?
Is that in China? Yeah, walking lane on your phone and not...
I mean, you could just say, you know, do you have to always be on your phone? But I think the thing about, you know, it's like, yeah, if you're holding people up behind you on the phone, that's one thing. And then cycling, like if you're going to be on the phone, sort of come in the slow lane. If you're going to be on your bike and be slow, be to the left hand side. Don't be in the middle of the road. Were you in the middle of the road, Max?
I was in a cycle lane. I was doing what I was meant to do.
You mean come on, get on with it. Start talking about football.
Yeah. We're being pushed on again, which is a shame. But Feyenoord 0 Manchester City 4. I did really like John Stones' first goal. Because of the way the defender was nutmegged so slowly. There is a goal, and I think it's in a charity shield or a cup final or something. Gordon Strachan is on the post and basically spends about, it's like he's doing table football between, you know, when you try and play it between two midfielders, about an hour, and then he backheels it into the net.
It reminded me of those Christmas party games where you try and pass a balloon through a line of people, but just only kind of like through the knees. It looked like he was trying to do that.
But City, look, it was a pretty easy game for City. We haven't mentioned on the pod yet the fact that Pep is playing Aguero and Jesus up front together, which is I'm pleased about because not many people play two strikers.
Yeah, and they're, you know, they're both deadly, deadly players. I've never quite understood, it's above my pay grade, this sort of thing that why Aguero isn't good enough for Pep, you know, what he doesn't do, it's about, you know, not being mobile enough, blah, blah. But I don't really notice that. For me, he is just fantastic. And Jesus obviously is too. I mean, he's got ice in his veins. He's physical. He's fast. The two of them together, very, very difficult to stop.
Barry, Paolo, are either of you paid more than Paul? And therefore, can you explain why Pep doesn't like Aguero?
I highly doubt that I'm paid more, but I suspect that it's the same thing that happened even at Barcelona. Like Pep likes players who are involved comprehensively in the team play, and so players who are strikers in the sort of purer sense, in the way that Aguero is, don't tend to appeal to him as much.
Manchester United beat Basel 3-0. Pogba came off because Jose, yeah, Jose realised that Garth Crooks was right all along and that Pogba shouldn't have such a haircut. And brought on Fellaini, who obviously just has a very sensible hairstyle, who then scored. I mean, the renaissance of, or just the joy of Fellaini is marvellous, isn't it? And also partly great that I don't think Manchester United fans want him to be consistently the one that saves them.
What, as in lumping it up to the big man?
Mm.
Well, yeah. But
I like the fact he's gone from being, you know, sort of the symbol of how much of a joke the club have become to being this player who is, you know, he affects every game he's in. And he's gone past the point of potentially being sold. Mourinho accepts him. Now he loves him. Now he's using him to send a message out to other players in the squad. I mean, he was perennially underrated anyway. He's always been a top-class player, you know. And he has a unique set of skills like Liam Neeson.
Jose said after United went 2-0 up, he started to see bad decisions, fantasy football, PlayStation football. And he said then the big clubs railed by...
Yeah, he accused his players of disrespecting the opposition, which is, you know, something he would never do, of course. But, yeah, I suppose it's just to keep, you know, like putting blinkers on a horse, isn't it? Just try and keep them focused. And
I didn't see it. Were they just doing lots of step overs and spinning round and round?
There's a bit
around
of showboating going on.
Well, that's all right if you're winning, isn't it? He also said the big clubs basically treat the group stages like a warm-up. And he says United are just hoping to sneak through the knockout stages.
I just say that I disagree with that? And I wouldn't have disagreed with it, but I think this week's Champions League has been fantastic. I think there's been loads of big games, mm-hmm. big teams playing off against each other, but also lots of top performances. And I think the way in which PSG went at Celtic, for example, they really wanted to make a statement. I think that sort of belies what he's saying.
I think you could say even the same for City. I mean, City last year didn't win an away game against anyone in the Champions League, which included going away to Celtic. So I think actually there has been a bit of a... It felt like it's one round of games, but it felt like there were many more emphatic performances this round than I'm normally used to seeing this early in the competition.
Yeah, you mentioned PSG.
Well, is that not... I couldn't disagree with you more, to be honest. I think it was just a monumental waste of time, particularly the first night. I mean, Celtic were absolutely pathetic against PSG. Yes, there's no shame in losing to PSG. Their budgets are, you know... It's the equivalent. I think Celtic's next game is against Ross County. Now, admittedly, Celtic generate their own income. Paris Saint-Germain don't. But it was just, you know, and
PSG spent 69 times what Celtic did in the summer.
Yeah, and it kind of showed on the field. But, you know, Celtic didn't acquit themselves very well at all. I was very disappointed with Scott Sinclair, Patrick Roberts, who I expected more from on the wings. Jozo Siminovic, the penalty he gave away was just gormless. And yeah, too many players didn't perform. It was Anthony Ralston obviously made headlines for start because he was drafted in to play at right back. Don't think anyone saw that coming. He's only 18. It was only his fifth appearance. And
was he the one that absolutely clattered Neymar?
Yeah, he clattered Neymar a couple of times. I think he was quite lucky not to get sent off, actually. He did get one booking, and he could have got three or four. The ref was quite lenient with him. And then there was a lot of needle between himself and Neymar. Neymar refused to shake his hand after the game.
And did that thing where he covered his mouth with his hand and then probably said, "You're not very good," or something like that.
I don't think he did actually cover his mouth. He did make some comment, and Ralston just burst out laughing in his face. But, you know, at the time, Celtic were 3-0 down, so, you know.
The way Neymar took that opener.
But, yeah, you have to be careful about this, because we have this debate every year about the group stages, and if you say they're a waste of time, you're accused of not liking football. Now, you do get good games, but when you look at the emphatic nature of some of the scorelines, particularly on Tuesday night, you have to wonder what the point of it is. And last year, you know, I think there's 96 games to get through the group stages, you know, to get them all done, to get to the last 16. And last season, of the 32 clubs, the 15 richest all went through to the last 16, which meant you basically played 96 games just to eliminate Tottenham. You know, is that, you know, and for me, while you do get good games occasionally, the Champions League doesn't really start till February.
Well, I agree with you. I would have it when I become, presumably if you become the head of FIFA, I'll get the head of UEFA job anyway.
Well, so there'll be no jobs for the boys. I'll run a meritocracy.
Well, I would make the Champions League back to the European Cup, but I'd make it one leg, not two legs, draw out of a hat, no seeding, round one, Man United, Real Madrid, get on with it.
I like it. I like it how it is.
There will be howls of derision from some of our
Well, there maybe there will be.
I thought it was quite good, actually.
Why are you talking like that?
I don't know. I just feel vulnerable.
I think they'll let it out, that voice.
What's wrong with that voice?
It's a bit weird.
Yeah, well,
did you enjoy Celtic 6, Carabag 0 then, Barry?
Chelsea.
Yes, did you enjoy Chelsea 6, Carabag 0, Barry?
Well, I didn't see it because I was watching Paris Saint-Germain 5, Celtic 0. But I saw the goals.
Zappa Costa scored a good one.
Well, yeah, he has admitted. I don't know, because I actually don't know if I've seen this in the press. The Italian press have reported him saying, "Yeah, I was trying to cross it." So, which takes away the magic a little bit.
God, but
I applaud his honesty and that of Harry Kane.
Yeah, you see, Harry Kane's looked like a cross. So you were going, that looks like a... He looked like he belted it with the outside of his right foot and saw the keeper. I mean, it was a terrible cross then. Wasn't
maybe,
it?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
No one's going to get... I mean, even if it got it in the right place, it was... Going so fast, no one will get on the end of it.
Yeah. Anyway. And yeah, I've got the quote right in front of me from in Gazetta. Oh my God, I've got to be honest. I was trying to cross the ball. I hit it with... I hit it full on, and then I saw it wound up in the net.
I hit the ball, and there it was in the back
of
the net.
Basically.
Continental football is so much more interesting to listen to.
But what... I thought he looked like a real Conte player already, didn't he? I mean, it's 5-0 up. I think it was for the sixth goal. He was still sort of there, pressing in the opposite corner flag, chasing the ball. And that's Conte football all over, isn't it?
Right, that'll do for part one. In part two, we'll focus a bit on the Italian sides in the Champions League, round up the rest of it and talk about people shaving their legs. Welcome back to part two. Paolo, Roma, Juventus, Napoli... all played. Do you want to round it all up?
Yeah, well, I was wondering about in Baz's vision of group stage three Champions League football, would any of the Italian teams even be in it? Because they've all started horribly in the group stage this time. Juventus got roundly beaten by Barcelona at the Camp Nou. Roma did get a point at home to Atletico Madrid, but it was sort of backs to the wall, clinging on by their fingernail stuff throughout. And Napoli managed to get nothing away to Shakhtar Donetsk, which really puts them in a bind right away in that group. So all around, a pretty catastrophic start for Italian football, actually.
Barry, when you take over, will you just get rid of Italian football teams?
No.
Okay, fine.
Can I ask Paolo, looking at on who scored, look like Juve played a back four. Is that something they've been doing this season across the piece?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm certain if you speak to Allegri, which we're not going to do, he would tell you that it's a fluid formation, but it's a sort of reaction to in part to losing Bonucci, because you no longer have that certainty of the players you had before. They've also got injuries at the back anyway, so it's not even like they can field Barzagli and Chiellini together at the moment. But actually, even last season during the run to the Champions League final, they lined up not irregularly through the knockout stages in a sort of 4-2-3-1. So that's already been the way that things have been shifting. It's just the personnel, I guess, that are different at the back.
Pushed it further, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think you really noticed within that back four, because Bonucci is the obvious player who left this summer, but people sort of forget how much we were raving about Dani Alves in the latter part of the competition. I think you really noticed in a game like this, you think back to they played Barcelona only in the spring in the quarterfinals of last season's Champions League, and they were so on the front foot for that whole tie, really, but certainly the first leg. And a lot of that was Alves. Alves just pushes you up the pitch. He sort of sets where the game is going to be played for you a certain amount, and I think Juventus are missing that quite badly at the moment.
Bad time for Portugal. CSKA Moscow won 2-1 at Benfica. Beşiktaş won 3-1 at Porto. Beşiktaş's third goal came from Ryan Babel, who
I saw that this morning. I didn't realise he was even still playing.
I thought he must have been about 50, but I get confused as to eras of players.
I had that too. Exactly the same thing. I thought he must have retired a long time ago. How old is he?
I reckon he's around 30.
He's only 30. It's ridiculous.
But the last I'd heard of him, he'd signed for some, I think, Saudi club or something. And I thought, all right, well, he's clearly just... that's all he can get now. But
so well done, Ryan Babel. Champions League new boys RB Leipzig were held 1-1 at home to Monaco. Both goals came within 2 minutes of each other in the first half. Bayern Munich played against 10 men from Anderlecht for almost the entire game. Sven Kums was sent off after 11 minutes. They won 3-0, Bayern. And Marco Asensio missed Real Madrid's game with Apoel Nicosia because of an infected pimple he got from shaving his legs. So we won. Maybe it sort of went in, became like an ingrown hair.
How badly does a pimple have to be infected to stop you from being able to play football?
You're a highly, highly trained and sensitive athlete, so any small thing could knock you off.
Maybe one of those, you know, the spots you get that don't come to a head and they sort of pulse. You know, you can feel them underneath. Has anyone here shaved their legs ever?
No.
I once got entirely depilated. For a video on The Guardian, I became a...
Did that get a lot of views?
Yeah, I became a drag queen for a day.
Okay.
And I had all my body stripped of hair.
All of it?
Video still
no,
available?
No, not my pubic region, actually. That's a good point.
Mm. As Barry said, can we see the video?
I think The Guardian has started... I think it's on YouTube. I think you can find it on YouTube.
Did it feel nice?
No, it felt very awkward, actually. And very painful when they tear it off the hair off your sternum, like the bit where the...
Were you waxed?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Waxed all over?
Waxed all over, baby.
So was he just shaving his legs in the interest of vanity, or is there any benefit to it?
It's a very good question, Barry. Right. And
I know cyclists do it.
Yeah.
But I don't.
Aerodynamism.
For speed. Would it make Asensio quicker if he had no hair on his legs?
Maybe he's just competing with Ronaldo. There's this sort of preening vanity, isn't there?
Do we know exactly how much body hair Ronaldo has?
0.84%.
Okay. Barry, you've written a piece on penalties and you're reading your own work in the paper. Tell us about it.
Well, this is like the FIFA. There's loads of stats that I can't remember because it was almost 24 hours ago that I had to write this piece. But it was brought to my attention by a guy called Simon Leave at Grace Notes Sports. He's sort of the head number cruncher and stats guru there. That more and more penalties are being awarded in the Champions League. Last season, there were 53, which is a new record, say, compared to just 18 in 2009-2010. So, you know, it's a huge, huge increase. There was a spike from 18 to 30 in 2010-11, which can probably be attributed to the introduction of goal line officials, you know, the guys... who many,
don't do anything.
Many confused pundits think don't do anything.
The one at Wembley didn't do anything. I know he's not allowed to give corners, but there were like three where he just gave it completely the wrong way, both ways.
Well, how do you know he... they don't give anything. They advise the referee.
Well,
and the referee acts on their counsel.
Okay. Well, this one certainly wasn't very persuasive.
Right.
Anyway, carry on.
That spike from 18 to 30 could be attributed to their introduction. But then in 2012-13, it went from 29 in that season to 46 the following season. I spoke to Dermot Gallagher, the retired referee, to ask him if there had been any diktat handed down or if he could come up with any logical explanation for this, and he couldn't. He was mystified. And then, yeah, last season...
Could it be climate change?
No.
Tiki-taka.
Just more, either worse refereeing or more fouls in the penalty area, I think. Okay. I thought maybe it might also be something to do with, you know, richer clubs getting more better and better and just the weaker clubs being under so much pressure that they buckle and foul in the penalty area. But in the group stages last season, there was 25 penalties awarded and almost exactly half, 12, were awarded against the teams who advanced to the last 16. So it just seems to be some quirk with no rhyme or reason to it. That was my conclusion at the end of a very hard day doing lots of sums.
Thanks, Barry. I enjoyed that. Shall we look ahead to the Europa League games? Arsenal playing FC Köln tonight. If you listen to the pod before the games have all happened. Paul, you've written a piece on Jack Wilshere.
Well, he's like Andy Carroll. He's one of these players that media are fascinated by. Still talked about in this press conference as being one of the most talented players of his generation. I'm like, well, I think that ship has sailed, really. But he might have a chance tonight against Cologne because Wenger, I think, if you read between the lines on almost everything he said about this tournament, isn't particularly bothered about it, at least not at this stage, and appears set to rest half a dozen plus players, which means that Wilshere might be in line for his first start in, 18 months at Arsenal. And so, you know, that occasions lots of misty-eyed reminiscence about his performance against Barcelona in 2012, which was admittedly stonking, and whether he can ever deliver that again. And for a guy who's experienced so many injuries, I think, again, reading between the lines, would seem unlikely. But... I think it's also fair to say that Wenger has a real affection for Wilshere, and he did say, you know, Wilshere takes, you know, he analyzes everything he does in his training, and he tries to get better, and also during this recuperation he's now learned to become professional, which I think means no cigarettes in Miami over the summer. But it's perhaps unfortunate that it's taken him this long for a guy who's that prone to injury to realize that, but that's where we are.
I saw actually just in the past couple of days Wilshere's been linked with moves to Fenerbahce and Crystal Palace.
Really?
So Roy Hodgson is a big fan of his, so that, and I think Wenger will quite happily let him go, so I suspect he might be Palace bound in January.
Paolo, there's some Italian teams in the Europa League action. Atalanta play Everton. Milan go to Austria Vienna, Lazio go to Vitesse. Is that Vitesse Arnhem? How do those clubs view the Europa League?
For the most part, in recent years, you've seen a lot of teams in Italy who haven't given it their 100% of their focus, we should say. But it'll be an interesting group this year. Atalanta playing in European competition for the first time in a long time. So for them, it's sort of exciting and new. The problem, and you know, I'm looking forward to the game against Everton this evening. Actually, I think that'll be a fun game because I think you'll see again a team, and hopefully for Everton as well, two teams that are really sort of interested in this competition and want to give it a go. I think that Atalanta, they've really been, they're sort of classically the team that produces young talent in Italy. They've got one of the best youth systems in the country, but they had a phenomenal season last year on the back predominantly of homegrown talent. But what happened was inevitably they got assets stripped. So they lost Gagliardini to Inter in January. They lost Frank Kessié to Milan in the summer. So that's the two of the sort of best midfielders gone. They lost their starting right wing back, Andrea Conti, to Milan. And their other wing back, Spinazzola, who's on loan from Juventus actually, was trying to engineer to go back from his loan to play at Juventus this season because his loan's a 2-year loan. And it didn't happen. So now he's not in the best of moods and isn't playing. So you've got sort of the core of the team that got them into this competition isn't there. But still a sort of fun, attack-minded and a clever side with Giampiero Gasperini as the manager. He's a very tactically astute manager. So I'm looking forward to that game. Milan, for them it's important because there's just a sort of question of pride at stake. Milan have been so poor for a long time now that the opportunity to play in any form of European competition has to be taken seriously. They've just spent 200 million euros in the transfer market over the summer. They're supposed to be relaunching themselves as a team that's ready to compete at the highest levels of European competition. I think this is a really significant barometer for them, and something that's really important for them in terms of brand building. You've got the owner there, Yong Hong Lee, who's talking about... His mouthpieces are talking about wanting to double the value of the club. You don't do that if you go into the Europa League and can't get past the group stage. So for them, it's a big thing as well. And on paper, it's a phenomenal looking team. The players they've put together there, you think about guys like Bonucci, Andre Silva, who hasn't played an awful lot up front, Hakan Çalhanoğlu. They've really rebuilt the whole side. But they also got spanked 4-1 by Lazio at the weekend, so there's a little bit of work still to go. And for reasons that a lot of us can't understand, Fabio Borini is somehow in that starting 11 at the moment.
Sorry, Paolo, your interview with Gonzalo Higuain, which yes. I thoroughly enjoyed, what kind of a bloke was he? What do you make of him?
He was definitely a man with his guard up. I think it's fair to say that his overall impression of journalists is not a warm one, and I understand that because
most people's impression.
Yeah. I understand that because he's also had some situations in the past where things have been printed that subsequently had to be retracted, that were sort of turned out to be entirely false attributions to him, I think he's quite a guarded guy. It takes a little bit of a while to get him sort of engaged, but once he did, I thought I had an interesting conversation with him. I hope it came out in the interview. He was definitely, sometimes you sit down with someone and they want to sort of chat to you right away. Sometimes you feel like you have to find an in with them. It was a bit more the latter with Higuain.
What's your tactic to sort of find an in?
I think in the same way as Higuain declined to give away the secret to breaking down to beating a defender. I don't know if I want to give away all my secrets, but I don't know. I guess the important thing for an interview, I always think, is to try and find something, anything that is just totally outside of what they're used to getting asked every day. I think if you can ask them a question that takes them out of the standard press conference, like, I know how to talk to a journalist mode, then that's what you need to try and find. But with some guys, it's easier than others.
Just want to finish part two by sending our best wishes to the Barnsley chairman, Patrick Crine. This was Jonathan Buchan who tweeted out a picture of Patrick's programme notes before their 3-2 League Cup win over Derby County, which begin, I'm living on borrowed time. I live in pain, but living is better than the alternative. Cancer is insidious, cruel and rapacious, and I implore everyone to have regular checks to stop it gaining hold. He writes of his love of the club, where they stand this season, for what that's worth, with the sort of perspective that the article brings, and just how much the club means to him. Incredibly sad story. Our thoughts are with him. We'll be back with part three in just a bit. Welcome back to part three of Guardian Football Weekly Extra. We'll look at the Premier League, get some of your questions and feedback corner. Premier League fixtures, chaps. Super Sunday is a Super Sunday this weekend. Chelsea, Arsenal, Manchester United, Everton. Which game excites you most out of them, Paul McInnes?
I'm looking forward to Spurs Swansea for no particularly good reason. I like to watch both of them play, but I think these two are, in other seasons, might have been more of a top table matchup than they are this year, at least the way Everton have started. I can't see anything other than a Chelsea win over Arsenal, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
I think it's a big game for Everton, this, because they've let themselves down, is it, three times already against top six opposition.
They were terrible against Tottenham.
And considering the amount of money they spent, you know, they need to make a statement. They haven't done so yet this season. And I think if they lose this game, it's, you know, it's almost a season ender for them, I think.
Are you saying Koeman out?
No.
Are you going to Palace, Southampton?
Yes.
To see Roy?
Yes, I am.
Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of these sort of hopeless sentimentalists, and, you know, I liked Sven-Goran Eriksson, I liked Roy Hodgson, I felt sad for him, I felt the players let him down, blah, blah. And I think he'll do... I did read something about, I think it might have been Barney, actually, writing about Hodgson and saying, you know what, perhaps the one of the flaws in the England job was, you know, he tried to go against type and he tried to become more adventurous and blood the youngsters, and that didn't work. And I don't think that's going to be the brief at Palace. Obviously on Monday you discussed all of this calamitous decision by Steve Parish, and I suspect that now you're back in, you've just got over the hump of, like, got that idea of, oh, we're going to develop Palace to one side for another season. They can just concentrate on staying up, and I think that will be fine with Roy will get them defensively sound.
It's a game you want, isn't it? Southampton at home.
Yeah, I was surprised at how easily they got rolled over. I mean, Watford are a good team, but you know, Saints are their level, and it was a bit easy for Watford on Saturday. I was quite surprised by that.
Watford played Manchester City. Hornet Shane says, how far can Watford go this season? Barry.
Eighth.
Yeah, you're right, aren't you? And they probably won't finish eighth.
It's possible.
It is possible.
I have a lot of time for their manager. I think he's very, very good.
West Ham go to West Brom. Huddersfield play Leicester. You watched the Monday night game, which yes. obviously happened after we recorded the pod.
Yes.
And I was actually quite impressed with just the energy of West Ham, yes. if nothing else.
Yeah, I don't think there was much else. But they were very determined to play for Slaven Bilic. And I thought they'd win the game because, you know, I saw West Ham quite a lot last season, and it did, you know, quite often when it came to the crunch, they would pull out a result and it would be a bit scrappy, but it would be hard fought and determined. And it was, again, more of that. What struck me was how annoyed David Wagner was with his team after the match. He really accused them of cowardice. He thought they should have been more on the front foot. They should have been more assertive. Whereas I was quite struck about, you know, how well organised they were defensively. But, you know, obviously Wagner wants more from them, and they're going to have more, because I think what they, you know, they got those three goals on the opening day, but they've only scored once since. So that, you know, they do need to score goals. Meunier was quite isolated against West Ham. Tom Ince in and out. They need more from these players, because, you know, it's all right keeping clean sheets, but if you can't score and you concede one, then you're losing.
We should mention Bournemouth-Brighton on Friday night, just purely because Bournemouth have not started particularly well.
No, I think they're going to be in big trouble this season. I mean, maybe a bit early to say because things change and managers come and go, and I don't think Eddie Howe is in any danger of losing his job just yet. But, yeah, he doesn't seem to have got their mojo going yet.
Got some questions in, chaps. Springing this one on you, if you can think of one. Ollie Scott says, what is the most overrated goal? Mine is Hazard's versus Arsenal last year. School kid defending scuffs the shot.
I would say Wayne Rooney's shinned overhead kick against Manchester City. I thought that got way too much credit.
Andy Carroll's overhead last year was better than that.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
Never got anywhere near goal of the season. Another goal of the season that I think is overrated, Paolo Di Canio's for West Ham.
Hang on.
That's quite... to strike a ball coming from that angle with the right foot into that corner.
Yeah. I just kind of think it was a respectable volley, and it was made to look superlative because of the sort of juggling of the feet in the air. But Charlie Daniels' goal already this season is better than that goal.
No. Because the ball's not cut. It's easier to strike Charlie Daniels' shot than Di Canio.
It's maybe easier to strike, but the opportunity was more difficult.
I think you might be guilty of sort of top corner-itis, where a goal can only be brilliant if it goes into the top corner.
I think he had a lot of space and a lot of time to put that goal away.
Whereas
I don't think that Charlie Daniels necessarily did.
Paolo in defence of Di Canio?
I just think that's a technically excellent strike. I think that's as you said, that's not an easy ball to hit the way he hits it.
How about Ronnie Radford? It was a great strike, but it was just, it's been overblown, Radford, for me.
But that was back in the day when
there was only one game on TV a year.
Yeah, and the Hereford United were
and
no
it was
marks.
A giant killing. So I think the giant killing add to the mystique.
Okay. Greg Jenner says, Phil Neville, Barry's nemesis, thinks Harry Kane needs to move clubs to be considered world class. How would you define world class, and do you agree, Barry?
I don't think he needs to move clubs to be world class, but I do think he needs to win things. Then I suppose you're entering into the realms. Matt Letizia didn't move clubs and didn't win things. I would say Matt Letizia is the greatest player I've ever seen. Certainly,
was he world class?
What? But yeah, he's world class. But you know, he didn't play for a glamorous club. He didn't play in a World Cup or European Championships.
But you see, Paul Merson would say the pressure on you at the higher up you go. So you're at Southampton. The pressure on you is there, and then. I'm doing hand signal for different heights, by the way. You go to Spurs and it's there, and you go to Liverpool and it's here, and you go to Real Madrid and it's here, and it's actually pressure is a bit an indication of whether you are world class.
Yeah, I mean, I think if people are going to sit around and judge Leo Messi at the point of not having won a World Cup, then you have to say, well, you've got to play in these games to be in the conversation. But I understand where Baz is coming from, because I think Letizia was just an outrageous player to watch. But when I think world class, I do have a hesitation with him, and I think that is just because I feel like I don't know. Like, I don't know because I didn't see him play in the most important games.
Yeah, Maradona went to Napoli and dragged them to the Serie A title. That is when you're world class.
And you can do single-handedly dragged Argentina to the World Cup.
Yeah, I think when you can do, you know, when that Letizia never won anything.
Yeah. I should probably correct myself. I don't think Letizia is the best player I've ever seen. He'd certainly be up there, but he's my favourite player ever to watch, you know. And if you just, there may be people listening who aren't actually familiar with him as a footballer, and just go on YouTube and look up his greatest hits. It's just,
well, I had that about
absolutely sensational
about Teddy Sheringham, who is obviously a very well respected footballer. But I absolutely loved watching him play football because he wasn't explosive and he wasn't quick, and he was lacking so many things, but it didn't matter because
he won the treble,
and he won the treble.
So he, you know, he did deliver. I think if Harry Kane takes Spurs to a trophy or two, but I think, you know, at the end of the day, there is something about if he was to go and become number nine at Real Madrid and replace Benzema, that would be another level of challenge for him.
I agree, although I also think you were right before. Like, I think if he dragged Tottenham to the treble, that would be the biggest thing ever. Whereas
I can't see him doing that.
Right, and that's it. We sort of don't believe it's possible.
Yeah.
If he did it, then there'd be no conversation. He'd be world class.
Yeah, I can see him winning the league. And then maybe, you know, the champion. I think they have to win something in the next couple of years if they're going to keep this team, perhaps even this season, if they're going to keep that team together. Mm. But with that team, perhaps things are possible.
Daniel says, can you ask Paul McInnes about Norwich's start to the season? Two clean sheets in a row, but fewer goals. Has Farke realised how hard the championship is?
Yeah, or maybe he's realised the limitations of some of his players. He was very playing 4-1-4-1, which at the beginning of the season, which is the sort of thing that Guardiola would do.
Mel, who's part of the production team, she is very angry with Cambridge United because in a pre-season friendly, we injured two of your players.
Yeah, Pritch. Injured Pritch and Closer, I think.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I think, you know, you've got to start. We're only 4 points off the playoffs. You've got to start from a defensive base. I think he's doing all right. A lot of bedwetting going on the internet, but we're fine. Not as good as Leeds.
No, Leeds.
Six clean sheets on the trot.
Amazing. Simon.
Top of the table, I think, for the first time in 13 years.
Yeah.
And I'm going to watch him play Millwall on Saturday.
Oh, have a nice time. Simon, I'm not sure how he feels. That's another championship-based question. See if you can work out from his tone, if he's a fan of Steve Bruce or not. Villa, Bruce, be patient because, quote, he's been promoted before, or get rid as he's an antiquated dinosaur who has no idea what he's doing.
You've doubled down on Steve Bruce this summer with all the money that was spent on Steve Bruce type players. You've got to stick with it now.
David,
you see, by the way, in the championship, I don't know the players involved, but one in the embers of Aston Villa's scoreless draw with
Borough.
Aston Villa player shot from sort of inside the penalty area. This absolute thunderbolt that was heading in sort of the right side of the goal. And one of his own teammates was sort of on the line and acrobatically tried to get out of the way, but succeeded only in blocking this shot. I mean, when your luck's out... you know.
Hey, Barry, David says, who does Barry fancy for the All-Ireland football final this weekend? Hard to look past Dublin, but Mayo have had some summer. So is this not the one with sticks? This is the one with just the ball?
Where you can pick up the ball. Well, right. Scoop up the ball. Okay. But it's Mayo against the Dubs. I don't really like Gaelic football, I must confess. I'm a hurling snob, but I would like Mayo to win because they've had a lot of close shaves over the years. And Kevin Kilbane's from a big Mayo fan.
Oh. You know how everybody's doing. You know how everybody's doing spin-off podcasts now. When you know you start one podcast and then you start another podcast. Barry's Irish Sports Podcast.
I'm not nowhere near knowledgeable enough to do that.
Is that going
to
stop anybody?
Stop me yet?
Hey, here's a couple of stories. A Tory MP, this is in the Mirror, who are slamming the Tories, has topped up his Westminster salary by working as a professional linesman at football matches. Douglas Ross, the new Tory MP for Moray, if I pronounced that correctly, has earned more than £2,500 as a match official since his election. The 34-year-old earned just £97.50 for the League Cup clash between Bucky Thistle and Raith Rovers, but he raked in a whopping £1,400 when he travelled to Slovenia as the assistant ref when NK Domžale faced Marseille.
I mean, I'm torn on this story because on the one hand, I'm like, you know, hats off to you. You've got pretty far in two different professions there. That's pretty high performing. On the other hand, I'm like, hang on a minute. Shouldn't you be serving your constituents day
in, day
out? I mean,
surely, fair play for picking two jobs where, you know, the abuse level. Like, it's like, what's the third thing he could do to make it any worse? Yeah, and actually, you know, like we were saying before the show, there are so many MPs who are, you know, non-executive directors of companies and things that don't make a lot of sense and get paid a lot of money. At least he's on the front line, isn't he?
And soon start as a parking attendant as well.
That's what he should do.
Am I the only one who's still hung up on 1,400 for one game? It's not bad, that.
Europa League qualifier.
Yeah.
What are the guys who do absolutely nothing get, Barry? Did you see this from the MLS? Atlanta United beat New England Revolution 7-0. The stats for the game are great. Just the Atlanta, they had loads of attempts, loads of shots on goal, loads of shots off goal, loads of block shots, loads of corners. Here we go. Ball possession for New England Revolution, 24%. Goal attempts, naught. Shots on goal, naught. Shots off goal, naught. Block shots, naught. Corner kicks, naught. Just imagine. And also, it's quite a long way to go, isn't it, if you're a New England fan, to go to Atlanta to see literally nothing happen.
It's a bit like Celtic against PSG.
A little bit. Hey, feedback corner time. Barney on Monday began the narrative, Paul Scholes wasn't really that good, which is a really good one. And it's been added to by Chinese Dazza, who says, early Scholes was good, but at least the last 5 years of his career, he was not as good as everyone's rose-tinted glasses remember. Even during his best years, Beckham, Giggs, Keane, Ronaldo were also better. Scholes looked good on highlights reels because opposition teams were too busy worrying about those other midfielders and left him loads of space. Somewhere in the late 2000s, it became cool to say he was amazing and underrated, and that stuck. So thanks for that. If anybody wants to add to Paul Scholes, it's a bit Badil and Skinner, you know, Pele was shite, isn't it? But like, add to them, brilliant footballers who actually were rubbish. Neil says, I'm enjoying the pod, but ironic that you, Max, should mispronounce Shrewsbury as Shrewsbury minutes before Chiro Syro Kiro Gate. As my late granddad used to remark, every time someone mispronounced it when reading out the classified results, show me the O, he used to say. Which does sound like a Bruce Forsyth sort of.
Paolo, can you confirm Chiro or Chiro Immobile?
Chiro.
Gah. Thank you very much. And Veer Knight says, or Weir Knight, don't know how you spell it. Well, I know how you spell it, but I don't know how you pronounce it. I always feel the more praise and love we heap on Max, the more uncomfortable he gets. You're doing great, Max. I don't think you're a twat anymore.
Does that make you uncomfortable? Is that sort of praise?
Oh, you much prefer getting stick than praise.
Yeah, you know where you are with stick.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, that'll do for today. Barry, thanks.
Cheers.
Thanks, Paul.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Paolo.
Cheers.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.
Football Weekly Extra. I'm Max Rushton. Adequately reading things off the piece of paper together with my Oh, fuck. I ad-libbed that one.
Not even that.
Keep that. Keep it in. Keep it in. Football Weekly Extra. I'm Max Rushton. Adequately reading things off a piece of power. Oh, God.